Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Using Real-Time Analytics with AI to Align Clinical Lab and Pathologist Staffing in Advance of Daily and Weekly Changes in Patient Demand and Test Volumes. The presenters are Curtis McNair, VPGM, American Oncology Network, Fort Myers, Florida, and John Moyer, Senior Product Director, HC1, Indianapolis, Indiana.
Well, good morning, everybody. Want to thank you guys for coming out so early in the morning. 7:30 is quite early, but we're going to do the best that we can. Really appreciate your faces this morning, and also appreciate the networking and the camaraderie and the collaboration the past couple of days with a lot of you I see in the room. And really, there's no better conference on the planet, in my opinion. So kudos to Robert and his staff and team for putting on a great effort so that we can advance our operations and advance the lives of our patients that need our services so very much. So again, I'm Curtis McNair, as you said, Vice President, General Manager of Laboratory Services for American Oncology Network. We'll go into a little bit about who we are in a second, but for introduction, I'll hand over to John.
Yeah, thanks, Curtis. My name is John Moyer. I'm the Senior Product Director at HC1. I've been in the company 10 years, working in healthcare, and really the technology partner for American Oncology Network, working with Curtis and his team, and really just excited to talk about how we're utilizing real-time data and analytics and even machine learning AI, which is a big topic for this culture and a real-world application. So,
awesome. It's always a privilege to come and share what we're working on. This is the third or fourth year in a row we've presented. We're always trying to stay in front of the curve with regards to technology, innovation, and bringing elite, proficient laboratory services to our docs and to our patients in our network. But also, we are trying to do the best that we can to innovate our processes inside our operations in our core laboratory and our ancillary labs across the country to make sure that we are as efficient as possible. And that we are utilizing every talent, every resource, and every piece of data, and AI, and HC1, John and his team has helped us do that. Before we get into the slides, just want to thank, I have some members from my team here, from Aon that flew up with me, and several members of John's team. So thank you guys for joining us this morning again, very, very early, but we're going to do the best that we can. All right. So we'll go into our vision, our lab industry, the problem and the challenges that with understaffing that I'm sure many of you undergo as well. We'll talk about a little bit about HC1 workforce optimization, what it is, its origins, and how we became to collaborate and why we thought it was a good partnership, and some of the success that we're seeing now. A little bit about how it works, show you a little bit of data, which is good. And the great thing, the impact that it's having on our operations. What we learned about the industry, what we learned about ourselves in terms of how we see things, how we work, and how we've typically done things and where we need to go, and then also the future vision. So just a little bit about us. I'll step out here just a little bit. So this is our presence. We have 39 practices, over 240 providers, ordering providers, over 110 locations across 21 states. We just opened a clinic in Hawaii. You see that number 14 way down there, so we're very proud about that. So we have a very wide footprint, so a large operation. So when it comes to operations and labs and getting our pathologies and genetics and different things to our core lab where you see the purple one down in Florida, it's very, very critical that we have an engine and a tool that can help us see where we're missing it and what we're doing well as well. Of course, our vision is delivering better care together. We're the fastest growing network of community oncology practices in the country. We are an aligned partnership of dedicated oncologists and veteran healthcare workers like yourselves, collaborating to ensure the strength and viability of what we call equitable cancer care. We'll get into that in a little bit, in community-based settings. So our mission is to preserve and enhance access to the highest quality, innovative and cost-effective, which is very, very important for us, cancer treatment and care in the communities where our patients live. So we take a personalized medicine concept, which is uniquely identified or identify individuals that need that particular solution. And what we've learned throughout our existence is typically, more times than not, the most expensive therapy in chemo or infusion is typically the wrong treatment. So we pride ourselves making sure that we give our patients, the right treatment and the right track record going forward for them and for their situation affecting them. What we've also learned through data is most drugs work in 4 out of 10 people. And so figure out an average dose, practicing medicine to the averages is where we've been. And if practicing medicine to the averages is where we've been, laboratory science and how we've facilitated that has matched that, and that has needs to change. So guide workforce and what needs to be done with patient and their treatments. As I said a second ago, lab operations needs to match the offering of precision medicine, right? I was having a conversation yesterday, and what I've said was laboratory operations would be termed the laggard here in healthcare, way behind the curve. The way we practice lab operations now is 20 years old. The mentality, the concept, how we do it, what we think, we typically become creatures of habit. This is the way we've done it. This is the way we do CBCs. This is the way we do flow. This is how we report it. This is what the reports look like. And we stay stuck in this groove, and it's affecting our patients in the bottom line. And we've looked at that and trying to change that. So how do I use the talent in my lab to get the most bang for my buck? Everybody is looking at staffing shortages, and the age-old solution is throw more people at it, right? Which is typically, 9 times out of 10, the wrong solution. Either your staffing plan, you don't have one, or your staffing plan is insufficient, or maybe you do have a great staffing plan, but you don't have a real good idea of where to use your talent, how to use them. So I use a lot of analogies. So in sports, to me, one of the greatest coaches of all time, Phil Jackson, who had the responsibility of coaching guys like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, there were a lot of great players on the team. Although those were star players, he had to understand, if you get his book, how to utilize Michael, how to utilize Kobe in the right situations, and how to complement with the other team members in terms of what are their skill sets, what are they not good at as well. So a lot of times we don't look at what we're not good at. We only want to accentuate our gifts and our talents in terms of what do we do well. But we need to look at the things that we're not doing well so we close the gaps. So the best pathway to get patient what they need in the timing that they need is to look at these concepts.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Curtis, for the intro and summary there of what you guys do and your focus. And for HC1, you're based in Indianapolis, Indiana, but we have customers all over the U.S. and abroad, and really aligned with the mission that Curtis and his team has, which, you know, our mission is the right patient gets the right test so they get the right therapy or care. That's what we've always done. We're specialists in that area of technology and integrations and data. And one of the things we really want to tackle is looking at the market as a whole. So Curtis showed that slide where you guys are spread across the whole country and just the amount of impact here. We always talk about the number of health systems, the hospitals, the number of clinical labs in the U.S., and we look at like beds, right? How many patients and throughput. But imagine how much staff, how many laboratorians, clinically certified managers, QA, QC, accessioning, all the people that support them, right? Is a huge impact. So just some key insights here, the U.S. clinical lab market being valued at $93 billion, and that was in 2022. Over $2 billion of that is spent on IT spend, on the LIS alone, right? That is with the backbone. It keeps everything operational, keeps things flowing. In one of the surveys here that was done, we can see the budget priority for executives was tech investment. Outside of just the LIS itself, you have the big buzz here at this conference, as it was last several years, more and more about how can we leverage technology, how can we leverage machine learning, artificial intelligence, natural language processing, all the data, the clinical data we're sitting on, to work smarter and not harder. And that's really kind of where we started partnering together and saying, how can we blend our technology and the care of patients together?
So our lab industry evolution. So where we are, and you guys feel the same pain points that we do, is fewer folks going into the lab market puts more pressure on us labs, right? Those existing labs that are out there, we have to do just be better. The cultural attitude, which is huge. So we have to start attracting staff, and we need to facilitate the care to where technology is going, or we'll be behind the eight ball. That's kind of that statement there is kind of outdated. We're already behind the eight ball, trying to catch up, trying to cover lost ground. And today, with HC1, we've figured out a way to kind of help us cover some of that ground. So the mentality has always been do more with less, right? But that's not really what it is. We need to have a paradigm shift here. We need to do better with the same that we have and create more, right? So take your talent that you have, your systems that you have, retool it, rethink it, and do better with what you have, reduce the waste, reduce the inefficiency, and create more, create opportunity. Take a quote from one of my colleagues back at Aon. He says, we are preparing for the future, not the now. And in laboratory operations in healthcare, we typically are, how do we respond to now? I mean, COVID was a very, very good example of that. We didn't respond to the now. We were reacting to the now. So by the time you get to reaction mode, it's usually too late, and the damage is pretty much going to be done. So we went from, and follow me, I'm a Matrix guy, right? If you guys ever watched, anybody watch any TV, you know, the Matrix guy. So where we started in lab, I started in the United States Army Active Duty Medical Corps, and we were doing urinalysis centrifuging, and I was spinning them by hand with a hand crankle, big tube. So I started way back in the day. So lab, old school ideology, manual processes, and no analytics, no data, no nothing. Just spit out results and hand it to the docs. Then we got to lab reloaded, right? Automated processes. When automation came in, it was just the best thing since sliced bread, right? Technology comes in. Hey, robots and different things do different things for us that we could take away some of our manual processes. Follow me with the Matrix theme here. Then we got lab revolutions, right? Data, process revolution, and how many people remember the onset of middleware? Every company on the planet had different middleware. This middleware does this, this middleware does that. And to this day, I really honestly still don't really know what all that middleware did or even does. All right, but it was there, and we liked it. Then the last one, lab resurrections, which is where we are now. We're talking about predictive analytics. Not being reactive analytics, but predictive analytics. How can we predict what may possibly occur? And in our operations, how can we predict what we need to do, predict our outcomes? As Jim Collins wrote in his book, Good to Great, your inputs and your measuring your inputs and your outputs is what's going to have you help you go from good to great. And we're trying to be a great laboratory operations in affecting our patients. Enhanced precision laboratory operations. To match what we said earlier, precision medicine. If our docs are precision medicine, then our lab operations and how we deliver that care and those results to them needs to be just as precise and just as specific. And we use tools like HE1's AI to help us accomplish that.
Yeah, great, Curtis, lead in. And next we'll talk about the problem. I think we're going to pivot here a little bit and saying, you know, we have a vision. We know how we want to operate. But really, staffing has kind of changed and over the years, which we'll get into a little bit more later. But, it's always been an area of focus. So you guys remember back pre-pandemic days, we got asked a lot from, our customers, and when we talk about analytics, is productivity, looking at cost per test, cost per FTE hour. How can we optimize that? A lot of, lean processes coming into play there. The adage, do more with less, is always the pressure, right? And on top of that, budgets kept getting reduced, especially in hospitals, health systems, where it might be 2%, 1%, but even that is a considerable amount of money depending on how many hospitals that or laboratories that touched. So once the pandemic hit, you know, we really, I think everyone realized like, ooh, this is an acute pain point, right? We have to be able to pivot. We have to be able to be not reactionary. We have to plan for the future. Now the lab testing is becoming back to normal. Now I think the focus is on staff retention, talent acquisition. How can we utilize our staff in the most optimal way possible? But these stats here, looking at just a percentage breakdown, 73% of labs are currently understaffed. And this is from a fairly recent publication breaking down. And some of you out in the audience may feel you're in some spectrum of that, depending on how you all are operating. And also it varies by department. So we look at the entire health system, then you look at individual labs, then you look at departments. And we'll break that down a little bit further. But just understanding understaffing, that's a pretty prolific problem that we're trying to solve. So I like to call it the people, patient, and financial impact for the three major challenges. So what we'll be talking about today is looking at these areas and really trying to solve for them. So employee burnout and turnover, you know, the quick metric here, the average cost to train a new employee around $8,000 depending on their specialty and their certifications for the type of laboratory work they're going to do. We want to obviously retain and foster our employees within the lab. And so that's one area that we know with staffing, if they're feeling burned out, overloaded, or they're not being utilized in the right way, that's something that, you know, we've seen across the industry. Operational efficiencies, so the patient impact, why we're all here and why where our mission stands is if we have poor turnaround time, if we're not staffed in the right departments at the right time, we need to get tests out by a certain time, 7 a.m. the next day. If we get a whole bunch of accessions coming in late in the day and we can't get to it, then there's a patient impact. Could result in a treatment delay, getting those results back to the provider and the patient, which obviously we're trying to avoid. And then finally, just contracted overtime staffing, the costs associated to all of this. So in addition to just the talent acquisition and hiring, if you do have to employ part-time staff or contracted staff, there's a higher rate for them. And also any kind of overtime that's accruing because we didn't staff up or anticipate the volume or the demand for patients and lab volume coming in, that can also impact it as well.
So again, to kind of go back a little bit, I'll go back one slide here. Mm-hmm. So the middle one, operational inefficiencies, poor turnaround time and delayed results, right? Poor turnaround time leads to delayed results, leads to treatment delay, 43% treatment delay, right? So matching this here, again, to reiterate, our operations and how we practice laboratory medicine needs to match the offering of precision medicine, right? It's no more this 4 out of 10 or this playing running lab operations to the averages. It needs to be precise by the patient, by the organization, and by the system of whatever we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, great. And right as we get into what we're doing and some real-world application of our technology, just kind of a, you know, how workforce is born, I always like to look at the past. If you learn from the past, you can take that and apply it to the future. And looking kind of breaking into pre-pandemic, during pandemic, and post, I know we're now a couple years out, I think, but, you know, as I mentioned before, the staffing focus was just completely different. And a lot of our technology is really applied at just looking at the billable tests, the hours that people are logging in what department, trying to do some supporting lean processes around that, and try to be as optimal as possible. But it's fairly manual. It's fairly hands-on. And usually once you pull the data and you're looking at the data and what do you want to do and you're giving that to the department heads or the lab manager, it can get outdated. There wasn't a really good real way to keep up with it. And we spun up a data science team in 2019, perfect timing, right for the pandemic, and really leaning into AI, machine learning, looking at big data sets, looking at patient cohorts, and really that's where we started positioning our company into looking at early disease detection, looking at diagnosis codes, looking at patients' clinical results, and applying that for our customers. But then the pandemic hit. And that's where almost unanimously a lot of our customers said, hey, we just got to go kind of switch to lights on mode. We got to make sure we're giving our best turnaround time back to our providers and patients, and the focus became on just keeping kind of the operational focus on just make sure we're optimal as we can. So we discussed ways. I was in the office of my vice president at the time, and we were just whiteboarding and saying how, you know, we've heard about the staffing challenge, and what ways can we apply our AI, machine learning, and data science division to this problem? And so that's where we decided, you know, if we can look at the laboratory volume, the individual testing, the specimens coming in the door, we have all that data. We're integrated with our customers. And if we can connect that to the staffing data and know who's scheduled in what department when, what the hours that they've worked has historically been to see if that matches what's predicted, we could actually say, hey, there's a prediction model, a forecasting of staffing based on that demand on how many patients are coming to the door, how much testing is being done. And really put some science to it, essentially. And that's kind of where we were starting to innovate and partnered with Aon over the last year and really launching head forward with some of our technology.
So the collaboration to solve the problem. We got together with HC1 and said, hey, listen, here are the issues that we're having. Being a heme path laboratory and oncology network, our talent is highly specified and very specific. If you lose the cytogenetic tech, you're probably in today's market not going to find one unless you want to pay them $200 an hour. That's just legit, right? Or if you lose a histology tech, you're probably not going to find one. Or if you lose a pathologist, I mean, the problem is very, very severe. And we had those situations, and it impacted operations greatly. So then we had an opportunity to try to say, how can we bring in AI to help us solve why we got here in the first place, right? And so this is where John's team and HC1 came in. We had employee burnout because we were understaffed and professional dissatisfaction, right? Missing expansion opportunities in testing. I could not expand my test menu. Had no one there to run the test. An inability to uncover spend, waste, and staff utilization and productivity because, again, we found ourselves reacting to our staffing shortage. So what were the results? of partnering with HC1, and you'll see some of the data in a minute, satisfaction on some of our lab KPIs. That's pretty general. Optimized staffing model for our core lab, which is in Fort Myers, in our Aon lab there. We were able to reduce some cost and waste, but the biggest thing was we were able to reallocate staff based upon data points, based upon predictive measures that HC1, the tool, showed us. Real-time data analysis to optimize operational effectiveness, increase efficiency and productivity while remaining cost neutral. That's big time right now. Again, doing better with the same, right? Not throwing more people at it, not throwing more budget at it, but figuring out how to manage what we have a little bit better and coming out on top. Critical time to look at this area based upon the current unpredictability. We still have positions that we cannot fill. They've been open for several, almost half a year. But because of this predictive model, we know how to reallocate the staff and reallocate the work so that we can still keep our volumes up and keep our services going out to our doctor patients. And informed decisions based upon intersection of timekeeping and lab data.
Right, so a little bit like, how are we doing this? How is it actually working? There's a little time to nerd out a little bit, but this is a simplified version. I just want to talk about the practical applications. You guys have probably been to a lot of talks on how we're applying AI, or different people are applying AI, different organizations. But the simplistic version of this is it's we're using real-time data, first from the laboratory. So laboratory LISs are providing the orders, the results. We're getting updates. The moment an order is placed, we can kind of predict when specimens are going to come in. And we know when results are getting partially resulted, final resulted. That's giving us our value, right? And so HC1, our platform, we just plug right into the LISs, or plural, multiple. So I know with Aon, they're divided with two different cost centers there, with pathology, clinical, connecting them both. And bringing that data in, and the real timeliness of this is what's key, because it drives everything that we're doing. The second component on the left-hand side is the HR or HRIS system. So if you guys use Workday, Kronos, ADP for your timekeeping in your laboratory or hospital lab, bringing that in, and it's pretty simplistic, but that API is basically going to provide who's scheduled in what department when in the future. And so we get essentially data to be able out 6 weeks in advance to kind of know what that schedule looks like, right? What's the shift spectrum for every department within the hospital? It's also giving us the hours worked, so the clock in, clock out times for every employee. So we're going to know how long they actually worked, which might be different than what they were scheduled. And then we also just get an employee roster updates to essentially give us any changes, new people that were onboarded, what departments that their main department is, and if they're afloat, what other departments are they certified in, potentially, for being able to move them. So that data coming into our platform real time then gets applied to two different engines. So we have an AI-powered demand forecasting engine. That's the first one that's taking the volume data, the clinical data coming in, looking at the schedule data for the employees, and looking out into the future and saying, we know can look backwards and understand what that throughput is, essentially. Look at what the volume is going to be for hematology, for cytology, for anatomic pathology, based on the last 90 days historical, and even looking back, if we have data for years, we can actually look at seasonal trends, because there could be some fluctuations in that throughout the year. The second component, which is the machine learning part, which is an integrated recommendation engine. So our CEO, Brad, always talks about, you know, it's important with any kind of solution you're applying in the market. It's one thing to report the news, which is analytics. It's another thing to make the news. What do I do about it, right? And I think that's the differentiator. So this recommendation engine essentially is going to look at future days in advance and say, hey, based on the volume coming in the door and what has been true for the history of this department, we've detected that we could adjust this shift, right? You're currently scheduled with too many people late. You need to bring them in earlier due to accessioning volume. That's predicted to hit at, say, 5 p.m., but the shift doesn't start until 6. So getting that hour earlier will prevent specimens getting backed up, being able to process, and then caring for those patients by getting those results back in time. So there's a feedback loop. And, you know, anyone that states machine learning and AI and all this is perfect is probably not a truth teller. So we understand that you have to continually train the model. And I think that's where this comes in, where the lab director and the department heads can look at this and say, oh, yes, I see there's a gap here, a shift that we need to adjust. They can get alerted for that up front. Maybe it's 2 weeks from now, and then determine if they want to approve or reject that recommendation that our technology made. And if they reject it, there's actually a reason, saying like a box that can enter, hey, I don't have anyone to staff, I'm going to have the manager work, or I don't have anyone cross-certified to move in from one department to other on this day. That then helps come in and train the model, and if we get rejected recommendations that are not accepted, that is, that helps train it, saying, hey, we keep making this recommendation about every Friday, and we get enough rejections to say we're going to curb that off. It's going to help train that model and be smarter about the recommendations that it makes. But all this is happening in real time, and so this is really powerful in the sense of you get someone on unexpected sick leave, the schedule's updated, but the lab volume's not changing. Whatever's happening, you still have to be operational. So having that feedback loop to constantly learn, constantly give the power to the department heads and the managers of each of these departments of the lab access to this data is going to be really, really important, especially as the volume might change day to day, week to week. So partnering with Aon, this is we worked together last year really to do the design work, the design, the prototype, testing it out, and now we're just in the early stages of launching it within the core lab with future plans to expand throughout all the different ancillary labs. So what we're looking at here is at the very top, we just want to provide some basic KPIs. You know, this is the real-time data going into predictive analytics and the actual recommendations. But the key performance indicators at the top really just break down how are we doing. Are we, to use a sports analogy Curtis was mentioning, are we winning or losing at a glance? You know, and that's really important to know at the right-hand side with those blue trend lines, the number of specimens coming the door, the number of tests that we're processing on a per-daily basis. That's next to the turnaround time there as well. And that spark line showing is it increasing or decreasing over the last 2 weeks. And if you extend that date range, you can look at, you know, month over month or even quarter over quarter. And then on the more left-hand side, we get into some of the staffing combined metrics, which is looking at the cost per FTE average per the day or number of tests per FTE hour. That's that productivity measure. And breaking that down into how optimal are we with that percentage as well, looking at the date range we're looking at here. The novel aspect, you guys are probably familiar with, like a staffing board. That staffing schedule or levels is going to look and say, the green checkbox means we were optimal. So if you have four people scheduled, four people works, and that's the volume capacity was, you know, 25 samples per hour. That means, or 100 per hour. That means 25 per person. We detected that was on point. So that means that that was matching what the expected volume, was lined up with the actual. And now looking ahead in the future, this is what's kind of novel about it, that forecasting engine is going out 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks out by each department that you can see filtered for hematology, chemistry, anatomic pathology, and seeing if we've detected either an increase or decrease of employees that we need to make an adjustment for. And so that's kind of the visualization of it and being able to drill through that to that to see the individual employees, what their shifts are, being able to see who can we can move where is going to be key to that as well. So kind of a staffing board, but with a little bit of that AI applied to it to look into the future. Next, looking at the trend metrics. So looking at the service level impact and the overtime impact, there's a correlation there. Service level impact, some of you guys might refer to that as productivity percentage, but that's essentially looking at what is the expected or the benchmark throughput that we know, say, chemistry can do or cytology can do, and what has the actual been multiplied, divide those two, multiply by 100, you get a percentage. So you want to be as close to 100% optimal as possible. So if you can do 1,000 specimens per hour in a department, you did really close to that, right? And if you were under, then that percentage is going to be lower, meaning you have people that potentially are, you know, doing glass washing. I worked in micro, so we were plating, you know, getting media ready or whatever. And you want to understand if there's a underutilization of staff, if the line's low, or if it's going up well above 100, you're probably overtaxing them. They're getting overworked, potentially leading to overtime, which is the graph right next to it, which is the overtime impact. So if we're detecting anyone that's spending, hey, they worked 8.5 hours, they're scheduled for 8 for the shift, or 10 hours and they're scheduled for 9, that'll pick that up and start breaking that down on that department basis as well. So if you have maybe a hot spot in your lab, so maybe it's a particular department or a group of folks that are scheduled late and have to stay late, this will pick that up, which I think is really, really important. And then the novel part of it below that is the recommendations, which is the machine learning that I mentioned earlier. So this is saying, hey, we've detected a staffing area within the department, within the lab, that needs to be optimal. You can click on optimize. That'll pop up and basically give the employee information saying, hey, you can move them from this shift to an earlier part of the shift, or you just need to remove them from this shift and move them to a new one completely. That'll give them that information. That's where you can interact and say, hey, we've accepted or declined that as well over time. And then finally, looking at after the actionable recommendations, the business impact. So that's kind of how we measure success. So what is success? And as we wrap up today, we'll get into some of the learnings and how we're applying this. But we want to understand, if we are making recommendations, and the bottom you'll see there's some green and red bubbles, those are accepted or rejected recommendations, is that moving the needle from a KPI perspective? So in this case, we're looking at the staffing cost per day, and we want to see, is the recommendations that we're accepting moving that needle? Are we trending down in a positive way or up, depending on what that metric is? And then our average line, or within a benchmark line as well, you can set that to determine we want to be at a certain level. And we want to try to stay as close to that as possible. That's not always possible, but being able to have some sort of goal and trend line to hit is going to be really what makes that sing. So you can see on the left, filtering by department. This can be isolated for individual labs. So if you have multi-labs, which Aon does, be able to say, I want to bifurcate and look at just our clinical department, or I want to look at all of our pathology departments as a whole, or if you want to look at your satellite labs. So if you have a main core lab, or multiple core labs, and you have external labs, that'll be important too, because you might, on a whole, this is what the problem is with data and statistics. If you look at a holistic view of it all aggregated together, it may look fine. But once you isolate down, that's where you can detect some potential areas of improvement. And that's what really with Aon, we're kind of getting that level of detail. So,
so how will it impact us? I'll go back a couple slides just to kind of highlight something here. John mentioned upper right, overtime impact. So for years, we've been scared of overtime. Overtime's been a swear word, you know, overtime, overtime, overtime. So we're not necessarily trying to eliminate overtime. We're trying to find out why we have overtime and accentuate those gaps and find out where the opportunities are to staff better. If overtime is what it's taking, it's just what it's taking. But we want to understand how and why we do what we do, we get the results that we're getting. And this tool helps us see that. Just want to highlight that. Might be going the wrong way. Let me see. Okay, so impact helped us understand our DNA of the workforce of our lab. What is our DNA? Ours is going to be different from yours. Yours is going to be different from somebody else's. And it also, being a HemePath lab helped us understand our staffing and our assignment, case assignment in pathology. Pathology processes are hard to quantify. Morphologies and different things, very, very, very hard. So it helped us really get to the nitty-gritty and is helping us understand case assignment, who needs, what pathologist needs to get what case based upon efficiency, based upon skill set assessment, based upon quality, and based upon turnaround time. So tailor-made oncology lab approach for our tailor-made infusion solutions, what we call precision medicine, early in a couple slides ago. And what I like to call, you hear me say this a lot if you hear me often, is a trifecta approach. We look at these three different areas. Number one, lab operations, all staffing levels. We want to have an effective workflow across all departments that's going to help our turnaround times and help our efficiencies. Number two, 3P, everyone knows is people, process, and product, but I say for us, our lab operations needs to have a positive impact on our physicians, providers, and our patients, right? That's the second box. The third box is of the trifecta is the bottom line, efficiencies, cost, and consciousness of resources. Not eliminating resources, but being resource conscious to understand the talent on my team and are they on the right seat in the bus doing the right assignment. What we learned that we need to think outside the box. We learned that the way we usually do it doesn't work, right? That's that mentality. Workforce talent changed. That means the work ethic changed, right? Baby boomers are gone. They're not at the bench anymore. We've got a different generation doing our work, so we need to approach that a little bit differently. Resources and processes didn't match the need. And the target moved from the first slide, what I said, generalized medicine on a general approach to precision medicine. So expansion beyond our core lab. We again, have labs all across the country. We're going to expand this into our other operational labs so we can become more critical to implement more of this automation technology. We need to assess our pre-analytical lab processes' outputs. Right? Outputs are only as good as the inputs. Whatever you're getting is a direct result of what you're putting in or not putting in. We need data and metrics and AI tools like HC1 and companies like that to help us understand these processes. And predictive logistics. We're a big operation. We need to get our samples in from all over the country. And so we need to predetermine how these samples are transported depending on the geographic area.
Yeah, thanks for listening. So our vision here for the future, in addition to just ongoing learnings, ongoing optimization, kind of our product roadmap, partnership roadmap, if you will, here for looking next at pre-analytical staffing. We're kind of in a post-launch enhancement phase, working with Curtis's team to ensure that we're doing everything we can to continue to tweak and train the model, get smarter with it. But preclinical staffing looks at phlebotomists, hematologists, the people that are involved, not just processing the specimens, but actually prior to them coming in, hitting the bench. Right, so we know that there's some errors there with depending on whether it's a hospital staff blood draw or whether it's a laboratory draw. There's some differences there, but we're exploring that. I think that's a lot of power there because that impacts when the specimens come in and kind of get more of a holistic picture. We're kind of missing that, and we want to expand that, get rid of that blind spot, so to speak, by including them in the staffing metrics that we're looking at. Next is specimen and test level complexity. So this is a very passionate one of mine. We all know that not every test is created equal. I was on a great talk yesterday for Bronson, so shout out to Joe who gave that talk, but really outlining the lean approach that they're taking and mentioning that, yeah, you could have different types of tests. Maybe it's the same actual panel or test you need to run, but if it comes in from an external person that's not already labeled, there's a higher complexity to getting it ready, getting accession, checking it in, going through the requisition process, and then putting it on the line to run, right? Others you have already labeled, already to go, those are easy. You just put them on and they're off to the races. So there's complexity within the same testing depending on where it comes from. And then when you get into pathology, you might have simple biopsies on one side and you have complex cancers on the other. Right. And so the complexity score, we want to give that to every single test that we have to know maybe the volume is remaining somewhat consistent, but on any given day, the complexity shot up, which even if staffing levels is remaining consistent and looks good, we could find that there's an issue there that we don't have all the people we need to run those more complex tests. And then finally, looking at advanced instrument tracking, you know, we understand that, like, right now we can get instrument data looking at the throughput, right? So within a department, knowing whether it's a Roche, Siemens, whatever analyzer it might be from a brand perspective, it's got a rated capacity on it. And so just because we might say, hey, we've detected that you could add a person to a particular department, if the bottleneck is technology and not people, that's what Curtis was mentioning earlier about people, process, technology all combined together, then we may recommend, hey, you have an actual bottleneck or hotspot in the lab that is instrument-based, not necessarily people-based. And so that's kind of the full circle of really looking at that people and process to bring test results back to providers as fast as possible. And so really excited about that, really passionate about it, excited to bring it to the next level, and something I think is fairly innovative in this space. And we're just excited to work with Aon, Curtis, and his vision and his team, really forward-thinking about how can we get in front of it. And all of this is to be proactive, right? In the end, we're here to care for patients, get them the results and the care that they need as fast as possible. And we don't want to forget about the lab staff. Sometimes it's the unsung heroes of healthcare. We talk so much about executive decisions and leadership and things that we need to have good strategic direction. That's all true, but we also want to make sure that we're caring and feeding our own, so to speak. So,
awesome. So we're pretty much out of time, but I just want to leave you with one thought. There was an artist years ago. Some of you guys might be a little bit too young to remember him, Paul Simon. He wrote a song, and we took his advice from his song called 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, right? Anybody know that song? You guys are too young to know that. Anyways, basically in one of the lyrics he said, make a new plan, Stan. So this is where we are. We have to make a new plan. We're partnering together with HC1 companies, other companies like out here in the audience today, like you all. We want to partner together to help make a new plan, a new vision for laboratory precision medicine going forward, because the way and the track and the groove that we're in is just not as effective as it can be. So with that, we are out of time, and we'll open up if we have a few questions out there, see if we can answer those for you. But appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Great. So the question was does this require a certain amount of staff buy-in, you know, patternized behavior and then really understanding what we're trying to do? And if we're saying, if they're telling us, the feedback from them is we need more people, and we're saying you got too many, that's a rift there. So, yes, it does. It needs to be training and teaching throughout the entire organization and every staff level bench. So I've done some breakout sessions with different departments that to help them understand, here's how we're looking at it, and try to get them on that same page. If we continue to try to preach this message and we haven't changed that paradigm with how they see it, then it's just going to be another miss. So the whole goal is try to get them to see it how we see it and buy into the data, buy into the vision, buy into the process. That way they can become not just part of the solution, but then they can own. I'm very big, my team will tell you, I need the leaders at the bench level to own these processes, but I give them the framework with how I need them to own it. In. Yes, sir.
Slightly conversely to that, do you have lab? I don't know if that's
yeah. Something you encounter. So the question is, do we have problems with buy-in at some of the higher levels, like you know your pathologists or your medical directors? Fortunately for me, we don't deal with that. We have a great staff and a great team of medical directors and pathologists, and I'm very blessed to be in a situation that they trust my leadership. But that wasn't just given to me. There was some give and take, and really the culture and the approach was to really understand them so they can understand me. And then us get on the same page so that when I'm trying to make changes like this, they kind of trust my leadership. And with some time and some success, we've had some failures too, they start to trust to say, okay, we'll go down this path. But my whole approach is we're not married to it, right? Let's try it and see if it works. If it doesn't work, let's make adjustments. And this product, this tool in AC1, they help us know how to make smart adjustments. So that's what makes it better. Was there a question back there? Yes, sir.
So I know you talked about the complexities for testing, and you mentioned some of the like productivity. In my lab, I struggle with justifying additional staff because we're constantly in my hematology chemistry department running around 99%, so we're just under that 100. But there's a lot of tasks that I can't quantify, like it's maintenance. Like we have Roche lines, it takes 3 hours to perform maintenance, and I have 4 of them. So that's a lot of downtime. Like, is there a consideration in this for some of those tasks, like that aren't a test?
I'll let John answer that, but real quick, I'll say, for me, and we can talk offline. I have read all the productivity and efficiency models that exist out there. As like a lean person, I am not, and have never adopted the 100% efficiency deal because it's humanly impossible to reach that, right? People need breaks. They got to go to the bathroom. They need to go scratch their head or whatever it is, or walk around a block or whatever, decompress. 100% is not. So if you're trying to reach that, it's just not going to happen. So we could talk about how we translate that later.
The great question. And it was around, you know, are we considering or is there a consideration for downtime, essentially? You know, maintenance, glassware washing, specimen prep, all that may not be actually running tests. And to a degree, yeah, there's some agency baked in. We didn't show all the screens there. There's a configuration screen on that basically you look at department, and you can set what is the expected productivity throughput that you set. So you as a lab director or department manager could say, well, even though it, you know, max capacity, we technically could do 1,200, you know, tests an hour, you could set that at 1,000. And so that will help kind of inform the model. So in any recommendation or those metrics that you saw were popping up, you have some agency. It's not just kind of running and doing its thing. You can say, well, I'm going to bake in essentially what that productivity should be, knowing that we got 4 people that, you know, have to take breaks or that they have to do some of that maintenance. So to a degree, yes, but I think there's some more sophistication that we could add in there down the road. And that's some of the learnings, I think, over this next year, working with Curtis's team about how we can even make that more precise or give more knobs and dials to tweak, so to speak, on it. But yeah, it there's a lot of agency there as far as what you said. And that's kind of the important thing. Yeah, great question.
Any other questions out there? Like that infomercial, just set it and forget it. Really appreciate you guys' time this morning. Thank you so much for joining our talk this morning. If you have any questions, just John and I'll be up front, and hope you have a great rest of your day in conference. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you, everyone.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.